He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Monday. It is 10/20/25 today. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst, and we are off to the races so far. The gates have opened, and they've broken out with a pretty good start here to the market here so far this week. We're going to have 90 S&P 500 companies reporting earnings this week. The Dow is up 244 points. That's a half a percent. Puts it at 46,435. The S&P is up 47 points. I want to say that might be an all-time high here. We're up 70 basis points. 6,011 is where we're at on the S&P. And the NASDAQ doing best of all. It's up 1.1% right now, which in this market translates to 244 points with the NASDAQ at 22,924, very close to its all-time high. We're seeing the bond market behave itself here today. We're under 4. That hasn't happened since back in April of this year. We're at 3.99% today only. And we've got gold hitting a new all-time high at 4,334, and we've got Bitcoin holding that all-important 200-day moving average, which with the rally of 3,200 a day, it's at 110,853. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only firm. This is my 25th, 26th year, I believe, in the industry, and have been doing a radio show and a newsletter during that entire amount of time. Barry doesn't quite have as much experience as I do, but he's been around long enough to have seen a thing or two as it relates to financial planning and analyzing the markets, etc. So I'm sure hopefully we've got some information here for you today that will be useful. You know, the biggest angst, Barry, I spent half the week last week down in Longboat Key, Florida, at the South Florida Business Conference. A lot of Bitcoin owners down there that I talked to. And, of course, I would say that's probably one of the most common questions that comes up. What do you think of Bitcoin? How do you like Bitcoin? Well, I think I've stated my my feelings about Bitcoin. I don't invest in it for my clients. I don't have that much faith and trust in it as I do proven companies, right, publicly traded. But I understand, you know, they want a better currency. They want to get away from the U.S. dollar. That seemed to be the common theme. But they also expressed quite a bit of angst last week, especially Thursday and Friday, as Bitcoin dipped clear down to 106,000, which puts it at almost 15% from its all-time high. So we consider that correction territory. It also came right down to its 200-day moving average, which is technical support for Bitcoin. And, you know, if it were to break that 200-day moving average, I would have even a bit more angst if I were a big Bitcoin holder. But it's holding it so far today. And, you know, if it were to go down below that and hit that 20% off of its all-time high, which was 125,000, that would put it in bear market territory. So you have to be very careful and watch for that.
And there was a lot of short interest amongst some yes, big holders of Bitcoin. So they were hedging, kind of doing some hedging against some of their big Bitcoin positions. So.
Yes, and they're scrambling today to cover those short positions, it looks like. But it's a war. It's a battle. It happens in every asset class. I don't care if it's oil, if it's gold. If it's the tech stocks, if it's China, that there's a battle that goes on between the bulls and the bears on a daily basis. Well, we're now well into earnings season. Earnings season is off to a good start so far. Man, I can't remember the last bad earnings season. I really can't. Right now, we're looking for 8.5% growth in earnings versus the same quarter last year, all right, which was also a very good quarter 1 year ago. We're seeing record earnings on the S&P 500. And as I gave my spiel down at the Florida Business Summit, I always show the chart of earnings for the S&P 500 since 2006. We're now got 20 years on that chart, a bar chart. And you can see the upward slope of earnings since 2009 after a couple of receding years, which led to the 53% correction bear market in the S&P 500 in 08 and 09. The market finally bottomed in March of 09. It's been climbing ever since, except for the COVID year. That's an extraordinary item on that income statement. And why? There's no better explanation than indexes and stocks follow earnings. You know, Barry, that was an eye-opening moment. It shouldn't be. It's just logic in my mind. But people, they make the stock market too difficult. And as I presented my little hour and a half presentation, it was mostly people from the medical profession, neurologists, urologists, people that own medical clinics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I just showed my graph of the S&P 500. And the total earnings of all of those companies comes down to one number, earnings per share. And it's gone from $60 per share back in 09, March of 09 was the bottom of the market. And we're headed for $350 per share, according to the analyst right now. And there's no better explanation for this bull market, which has carried the S&P 500 from 660 on up to 6,660. That's a tenfold increase than the earnings increase of the market. And that's why I watch earnings so closely and base my investments on earnings. And Barry, I stood up before them all and I put about 10 symbols on the grease board, right? I said, what do all of these stock symbols have in common? AT&T, Procter & Gamble, Kimberly-Clark, you know, on and on and on with all of these big blue-chip stocks, Intel, IBM. I said, what do they all have in common? Merck, others like that. I said, their earnings growth has been very subpar over the last 10 years. And if stocks follow earnings, it only makes logical sense that you want superior growth earnings in earning stocks. And I said the other thing that all of these big companies have in common is they're the most owned stocks on Wall Street. And almost every portfolio that transfers to me from one of the big Wall Street firms, I already know what's going to be in that portfolio. A lot of those, most of those, and a lot more of those aforementioned stocks. And I showed the earnings growth of some of them, AT&T, for instance, minus numbers, Disney, for instance, single digits, many single-digit earnings growers. A lot of them are in the Dow. And then I gave them examples of companies in today's world that are growing by 20, 25% per year. And I said, which one do you want to invest in? And I could see several of them squirming in their seats, Barry, because I know that their big Wall Street wall firm, wirehouse firm, has them in those big soggy stocks that are going nowhere. And to make matters worse, most people are in a 70-30, 60-40 asset allocation, okay, stocks versus bonds, depending on their age. And we talked about other factors besides your age that impact the bond market and the stock market, which should be taken into account, in my opinion. And I said a vast majority of America's retirement money, because of this asset allocation formula, is in bond funds. And then I showed the average return of an indexed bond fund, which includes all of different types of bonds, etc. And it was 1.8% over the last 10 years, 1.8%. Well, that really waters down your portfolio considerably. You can improve that performance markedly by owning the individual bonds as opposed to bond funds, which are going to give you, the individual bonds are going to give you that coupon rate, which is going to be in the 5 to 6% area, and hold them to maturity. That does a heck of a lot better than a bond fund that's averaged 1 to 2% over the last 10 years, which really waters down your portfolio. Then, of course, on that stock side of that asset allocation, doesn't it make sense to just kind of drift away from the big old soggy stocks of yesteryear into a little bit more vibrant portfolio, the NVIDIAs of the world and the Ubers of the world and the DoorDashes of the world? Those are the growth engines of today. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. It's the Best Stocks Now show. A lot to talk about when we come back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Earnings are so, so critical to the market. I've said it many times, in real estate, it's location, location, location. In the market, whether it's the private markets or the public markets, earnings, earnings, earnings drive the bus towards valuation and capital appreciation. So we are in earnings season now, and there's estimates out there on the street for the rest of this year, 2025, all of next year, 2026, and 2027. And the market currently is looking at the 2027 earnings estimates and trading on those numbers. And that's why it's so critical to not only look at today's earnings reports, but also future estimates and where they're at, because the market has already priced in today's earnings, looking back over the last 12 months. It's now looking forward 24 months on individual stocks and on the markets themselves, and we'll trade on those future estimates. Well, let's take a look at how we're doing so far. And like I say, I can't remember the last bad earnings season that we had. We now have 12% of the S&P 500 companies now reporting earnings, who have reported earnings. 86% have beat their EPS estimates. And 84% have beat their sales estimates. And Barry, I always get the argument when I present my, about the stocks and the market trading on future earnings expectations. And someone always asks me, do you really trust those analysts out there, and the companies? And I say, yes, I do, because the analysts are getting their information from the companies. And if anything, the companies are sandbagging the analysts. And actually, the earnings estimates out on the street are probably understated. And the reason I say that is, look at this so far. This is pretty typical. 86% have beat their earnings estimates. In other words, Barry, they sandbagged 86% of the analysts out there and came in and beat the estimates.
Yeah. I mean, in recent memory, probably the biggest upset in terms of how earnings had to be notched down from what was expected was 08-09, and most of it was due to essentially bank earnings, right, and write downs of portfolios. Some would argue at that time was extraordinary losses. In reality, they ended up being very ordinary in terms of what was happening in that business, but that discovery process, right, took a little while. And that was a unique situation. Usually, if you follow estimates and you follow them closely, you're going to see, a bit of writing on the wall, right, in terms of, potential downturn.
Yes, and I started to see it in 2006. That those estimates for 07 and 08 were starting to be ratcheted downwards. That's a bad sign. We're still in an environment where earnings estimates continue to be ratcheted higher. right now. So you got 12% of the S&P have reported. That's, what, 60 companies. We're going to get another 90 this week. 86% have beat their EPS estimates. We started this quarter with anticipation of 7.3% growth, and now we're at 8.5, which also proves my point that estimates are going up, they're going higher. And this will be the ninth straight quarter of earnings growth. And, of course, we've still got a long ways to go, but we continue to watch those earnings. Now, the other part of that earnings and price target equation is the multiple that you multiply those earnings by. Right now, the forward P.E. ratio is at 22.4. It has dropped a little bit. We were at 23. But the average price target for the S&P 500 out there on the street right now is about 7,300 over the next 12 months, okay? And the charts of the S&P, the NASDAQ, and the Dow all still look favorable. But we take it a day at a time, we take it a stock at a time, an index at a time, 1 week at a time, and we stay vigilant at all times. Okay, let's get into some of the news here. Earnings this week, okay? Let's take a look at who's going to be reporting this week. We're going to have technology. We'll be under the microscope. Updates from Tesla, which is probably one of the top five earnings reports. Netflix, probably in the top 10. Intel, which is pretty important. Are they making a turnaround? Are they having it? Have they put it into place? We don't own Intel, but Intel will report. Texas Instruments, SAP, T-Mobile, the venerable old AT&T, one of the stocks that I always use as a the poster child of a soggy stock. IBM, Lam Research, QuantumScape, that's a big one. They're making the solid-state batteries for the EV cars that may come into place. And then it's soggy Wednesday. Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, 3M, General Motors, Philip Morris, Honeywell, Illinois Tool Works, and a soggy stock that emerged from soggydom and has become a very relevant stock once again. General Electric will report this week. You're going to get Raytheon, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman. In the energy sector, which has been a very poor sector to be invested in 2025, we have no exposure at all. You know, you're down to $2.39 a gallon in gasoline, Barry, with oil at 60. Let's see, where's oil today? $58 per barrel.
Yeah, under 60 a barrel.
Energy sector, you have Halliburton, Baker Hughes. We don't have any exposure to the oil sector. Get some of the big airlines reporting, some financials, Chubb, Capital One. Tractor Supply, Vert, VRT, which has been kind of an important AI stock, you know, smaller, aggressive kind of stock. That's the earnings that we're going to get this week. How about this news here? This really caught my eye. NVIDIA and Taiwan Semiconductor, two of the best stocks in the entire market today. No, it's not Procter & Gamble and AT&T. They have been disrupted by many disruptors along the way. And I gave examples of companies that have been disrupted. I said, look, Disney's been disrupted by Netflix to some extent. Yeah, Intel's been disrupted by NVIDIA, right?
Well, you got some companies who have been a disruptor, and then eventually down the road they mature enough, and then what happens? Somebody comes along and disrupts them. I mean,
you have to look at an
IBM, even a... You know, a Cisco over the years, right?
Cisco's been disrupted by Arista Networks, okay? Yeah. Do you want to own the disrupted or the disruptor? NVIDIA and Taiwan, Taiwan Semi completed their first made in the USA Blackwell chip wafer. Okay? Well, that's not the complete chip itself, but very close to it, and I'm sure they could take it to the finish line if they wanted to, but Taiwan Semi is not willing to give that up, but they did it in Phoenix. This is a historic moment, Jensen Huang said. It's the very first time in recent American history that the single most important chip is being manufactured here in the U.S. That's big news. Really is. We'll be right back. But I must do the wrong call. Hit us in a bad place.
And I wonder what it's good for. I've been in a right place. This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. And I want to add one more thing to that Taiwan Semiconductor NVIDIA story. It actually is a Blackwell chip, a fully loaded, you know, Barry, like a fully loaded baked potato. It's got everything in it. Why is that important? Well, with, you know, naval China warships circling Taiwan and buzzing them on a daily basis, how important is it for us to be able to make a Blackwell chip here in America instead of being totally reliant on Taiwan? And it continues that whole supply chain big correction that is taking place. So to where, of course, rare earth is at the center of it all right now. I was reading about antimony this morning and how many things antimony is in. China has 90%. They mine 90% of the world's antimony. Which has a lot of defense. It's in semiconductors. It's in almost everything. And we're trying to onshore a lot of this stuff so we're not dependent on other countries.
Yeah, I mean, I think of it as if you were a company, right? You want to be in as much control of your own supply chain as possible, right? We talk about a vertically integrated supply chain. And so as a... You know, as a country, it's something that's important. You need, I mean, you get reliant on, you know, certain components elsewhere, and, you know, you've got to at least make some at home.
And it's given other countries leverage. So China is using the rare earth, obviously, as leverage in this whole trade negotiation. And there is talk that maybe they're getting closer. I mean, the ultimate solution, I don't know if it will happen, would be
to
give
her minerals.
Well, would be us to give them full access to the chips and them to give us full access to the rare earth. That would be the ultimate. And that's what Jensen Huang is pushing for. We'll see.
Of course. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, well, that would be good for Jensen and his pocketbook. Okay, the other thing I want to mention is, I got to see my nephew's presentation, and of course he worked right alongside Clayton Christensen at Harvard University, who wrote the book, the Bible, called The Innovator's Dilemma, When New Technologies Cause Great Firms to Fail. Okay? And I would say that the market is littered. You know how many stocks that I followed over the years, Barry, that aren't around anymore, that failed to keep up, that failed to innovate? And this is the Bible on the whole innovation disruption, the innovator's dilemma, that not only it's mostly a dilemma to the companies that are being disrupted. What do you do about it? He gave a great presentation. And then, of course, I followed with my presentation, and I wrote about, put on the board about 6 or 7 companies that have been disrupted totally. I mean, Intel is a perfect example with NVIDIA and AMD, really, both of them, and Broadcom totally disrupting Intel and Intel falling by the wayside and now needing an investment by the U.S. government and even one by NVIDIA to try to help them out. So It's a real thing. Disruption is, and in today's world, it is very much a real thing. China's Q3 GDP up 4.8% year over year. That's its slowest pace since 2024. It is better than expectations. Hey, Barry, we were just at 3.8% in the most recent quarter. I remember when China was running at 7%, 8%. And, of course, it seems like the scales are being balanced a little bit out there on this whole trade imbalance.
Well, in Europe's interesting because, I mean, they're getting, you know, essentially, you know, getting a bunch of cheap goods from China in terms of, you know, I think BYD is working on building maybe their fourth factory in Europe at the moment. I think it's going to be somewhere around maybe in Spain, but the point is they're benefiting kind of from some of these trade changes where things are selling into Europe more.
Yes.
And they're getting cheap goods, and then it's also crowding out some capacity at the at home. I mean, look at Germany. They've been certainly weaker on a GDP standpoint. So partly they've benefited from an inflation standpoint. On the other side, they haven't benefited in terms of growth.
So. No, China buys no U.S. soybeans in September amid trade tensions. So this has not been good on the U.S. farmer. But there is talk of a grand deal to be made. How about this? I couldn't believe this. You've got an ETF company, Volatility Shares, looking to push the envelope 5x leverage, Barry. I'm not for that at all. I mean, we're at 3, right, on ETFs.
Here's okay, the whole and here's the math though on a third. So when you get into these 3x leveraged deals, so I mean, if something goes down 33%, essentially you're close to zero in terms of your initial investment. And there's times where you can look where the NASDAQ was down over 33% in 2022, right? So if you're holding,
what was that due to a 5x?
That's only a 20% drop at most, right? If it's 5x, and so those happen, 20% drop, that's just a normal correction. Those historically have happened every 18 to 36 months.
Yes, so I'm not on board with that. And ETFs were invented in the first place to spread risk around, right?
It was actually to hedge.
Lower risk.
Yeah, to hedge. Just
and
like
now,
options. Options were created that to be a hedging tool.
Well, now they have these single stock ETFs that are leveraged. That totally defeats the purpose, in my opinion, of this whole ETF lowering your risk level. Blackstone, Jonathan Gray warns that investors are underestimating AI's disruptive power. I would totally agree with that. I mean, you look at the disruption dilemma, and almost every industry is looking to add AI to their lineup of technology to keep up with the rest. And even in the medical industry, AI's become a big thing, as I listen to a lot of these physicians and whatnot down in that neck of the woods talking about it. How about the prediction markets? Kalshi trading volume surges among high drama of the Giants and Broncos NFL game. But this Kalshi is quite an interesting deal. It's disrupting the sports betting. It's disrupted. We backed out. We owned Flutter.
Is it Flutter? Yeah.
And I saw Flutter, start to break its technical support. And it's Kalshi that's coming along and disrupting them. Now, Kalshi is a private company. But Kalshi, is doing all these different propositions on, when will the government shut down and blah, blah, blah. And the word Kalshi in Arabic means everything. So in a way, I mean, remember when the big hedge, the big short, he knew the mortgage market was going to blow up. They had one of the big banks create a vehicle for him to invest in to profit from that. And of course, he made a lot of money. But now with this Kalshi, there's going to be a lot more opportunity to hedge or to pick on very bad business models, etc. Or, you know, it's even extending now to Robinhood. They're looking at the prediction markets. I think maybe Interactive Brokers also. So anyways, very interesting story with this Kalshi. United States antimony to bolster critical minerals portfolio with an all-stock big bid for Larvotto Resources. So, you know, that's been a hot little stock, United States antimony. That's way out there, however, on the risk scale. I just want to remind you of that. We continue to shift away from wind and solar. That's a big move. Vestas, which is the largest wind energy company in the world, is nixing their Polish wind turbine plant on weak European demand. Now, you know it's weakening
if they don't,
when Europe
if they don't
starts
have
to back off.
If they don't have a demand for it, you know it's weak.
Forget about
you know
it.
They need some, you know they need power.
And, of course, nuclear is all the rage and a very investable theme right now as the power, the energy that is being gobbled up by data farms is enormous.
You know you're on the wrong side of the power investment theme if you're in a spot where you're not going to do a project. Put it that way.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Apple has pretty good sales going with the 17. We don't currently own Apple. We haven't seen much innovation out of Apple in quite some time. Kathy Woods is loading up on Alibaba. Maybe it's time for us to sell our Alibaba there, Barry. We'll be right back.
On a winter's day, you got to go.
Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Barry, I got to mention Burns Steakhouse in Tampa. You've been there, right?
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah, it's really. I knew you were gonna enjoy it. I didn't want to spoil it, and I knew you'd heard a good bit about it. But
well, it really
knew there was
is
a dessert room that you might want.
Yes, it really is a one of a kind restaurant, really, in America. Do you know? I mean, I'm not a drinker, but their wine collection is worth $80 million. When we
I didn't realize. I didn't realize it was that
million.
Much. That, when you said that on the show on Thursday, I was thinking, you know, insurance wise, you got Lloyd's of London must be carrying
cow.
That.
An earthquake would disrupt them big time. But anyways, what an experience that was!
It's a good city.
We were in the owner's
it's been a long
room.
Time since I've been. Yeah.
And, like, we had every appetizer on the menu, every steak on the menu brought to our table. It was just an unbelievable experience. And if you ever are in the area, you can get into the dessert bar upstairs, which are all these little private booths, and they just have a dessert menu, a whole different wait staff up there, whole different kitchen up there. And it's only dessert. So you can at least get a taste of Burns by going to just the dessert. And I would say this, that St. Regis Hotel on Longboat Key is probably the nicest hotel I've ever stayed at. And I I've been around quite a bit, stayed at some nice things. Reminded me a lot of Cabo San Lucas down there at the tip of Baja.
How was the weather? Situated. Was the weather nice?
Beautiful. Gorgeous. I mean, the bay was calm as a lake, and the sand was white, and the sky was blue and the clouds were billowy and white. That St. Regis Hotel, if you live in the area, we have a lot of clients and followers in the Sarasota, Lakewood Ranch, Tampa, clear down to Naples area, Orlando. Man, go check out that St. Regis Hotel on Longboat Key. It really is something. If you just go there in the lounge, I mean, they have live music every night, piano, and they had a Latin jazz band on Friday. Man, I had a good time down
there. You like a good jazz band.
Oh,
I know
boy.
That's a winner. Right there.
Yeah, okay. So, and they have, for the kids, they've got a big pool that they can swim in that's full of stingrays without their stingers. and fish. They've got a giant lazy river with grottos, with jacuzzis in the grottos. They've got a huge sushi bar built up high overlooking the Gulf of America. Is it the Gulf of America or Gulf of Mexico? I still see Gulf of Mexico most of the time when I see it referred to. And that crystal clear water to dip your toes into, that's all. It's all good. Okay, earnings season is upon us. Yes, I do look at the earnings of every a company that reports. Some of them are not consequential, obviously, but others are very consequential.
It's like their stats. I like how you say it's like looking at the back of a baseball card.
Yes, and you know, when I was speaking down there, I said the first thing I look at when a player comes to bat is his batting average, his home runs, his RBIs, whatnot. And, of course, when you go to the horse races, which I grew up going to the horse races when I was a kid, and we do plan on going to the Breeders' Cup next week out in San Diego, you look at the track record of the horse. You know, he's never won in 66 times. You think he, all of a sudden he's going to wake up and mow him down in the stretch? No, I don't think so. You know, and that track record of a stock is very, very important. That's the starting point, and it's very easy to eliminate a stock very quickly. And the physicians seem to like the whole concept of baseball. I mean, they're all Tampa Rays fans down there, and they know about Moneyball and fielding the best 25 players on your team when you come out of spring training. And you know, and I said, look, your portfolio has room for 25, maybe 30 players in it, and don't you want to have the very best of the best? You want to have an 0 for 66 horse running in your stable, in your portfolio? Do you want to have a utility infielder batting 168 or a relief pitcher with an ERA of 10.47? No, you want to have the very, very best, and there's limited space in your portfolio. Why fill it up with dead weight? You've got to make that thing vibrant. It's like a garden. You plant that garden, and over time, some of the plants are not quite thriving like the others are, and you got to pluck it and replace it with another one. You got to send them down to the minor leagues. Or if you're a horse 0 for 66, you got to maybe move them to a track that has a very low grade of horse where he can win, or retire him to the farm. That's probably even better, and make him a pet for kids, right? But he's probably grouchy after being over six. Probably kick the kid off. I don't want you on my back.
Send
I don't like
the
jockeys.
Yeah.
Send him out to pasture. So anyways, those are some concepts that I talked about. And, of course, I always give living examples of companies that were once, you know, and the disruptor's dilemma, there's obviously talking about, and my nephew starts his presentation with showing all of these companies that at one time were major companies in America, right? Control Data, I remember Control Data, I remember Xerox. These were disruptors at one time, but now they've totally been disrupted. Most of them are gone. Hewlett-Packard was a major disruptor. Intel was a major disruptor. But unfortunately, they couldn't quite keep up with the times and fell behind, and many of them are not even around anymore. IBM chooses Grok. You know, a lot of people are telling me I should be using Grok. Now, I've got to check that out. I haven't used it yet. Grok is a major competitor to Anthropic, major competitor to OpenAI, major competitor to Gemini. I do know this, that OpenAI is dominating right now. The ChatGPT is dominating over Google's, Gemini, and the others by far. And they're going to be able to monetize it. But my little nephew, he's not little. He's way bigger than me. I am. He could probably beat me up if he had to, take me in a wrestling match. But he was saying he doesn't see the revenue model really working for these big AI companies unless they're able to charge a whole heck of a lot for very sophisticated AI searches. But right now he's not seeing the revenue models really working for those companies. So I don't know if I want to have any exposure to Anthropic through a private equity deal or not. Well, to make an appointment with us for a free portfolio review, maybe you're in a bunch of soggy stuff, give us a call at 855-611-BEST or just sample the newsletter. You get 4 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.